give a warm welcome to our warm-up speaker, Zach.
All right, I'm Zach, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 21st, 2013, so by the grace of God, if I stay sober for another 6 weeks, 2 years. So I'll start a little bit of background history. A lot of you probably don't know me or have seen me before. I've recently moved up here to the Visalia area from the Los Angeles area, so I'm fairly new to the area. From the very beginning, I felt different and unique. I was, how do I put this gently? I was artificially inseminated into my mother, so I felt different, so to say, from other children. As far back as I could understand the concept of sex was, as far back as I can remember that concept of insemination. So I felt the uniqueness from the get-go. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, in a town called Somar. And I was kind of a troublemaker, you know, doing regular stuff, set the park on fire, throw rocks at the cars type things. I was a little bit of a troublemaker. And I had a really tough time in school learning. So I couldn't read very well. And I needed help in schooling, so about the time I went to junior high, my parents did not want me to go to San Fernando Middle School, so we moved up to Santa Clarita, which is, for those of you that don't know, that's where Magic Mountain is located. And I went to, basically just moved to a suburb of Los Angeles, and really had a hard time socializing, making friends, pretty much got to the point where I'd do anything to fit in, just to make a friend. And I got involved with the wrong crowd of people. I remember we were stealing from other kids, you know. And I got invited one day after school to go hang out. The next thing I know, they're throwing me a can of Ducati, which is one of the most god-awful beers in the world. We used this as an instrument for other substances, and then I had a cigarette. I was triple whammy from the get-go, all within 20 minutes, and I was hooked. Shortly after that, I got in trouble with the law for this stealing, and the same day I was arrested for that, my father died. I found out my father was going to die. He died from a rare brain disease, which was kind of like mad cow, deteriorated his brain from the inside out. I watched my father go crazy for about 6 weeks before he finally passed. I didn't take that very well at all. I was 15 at the time. And from that point on, I did not like reality, and I would do whatever I could to get away from reality. And I remember the first time I got drunk. I was 16 years old, upset about this relationship with a girl. I didn't want to feel it, the emotions that I was feeling. I went into my mother's kitchen cabinet, grabbed this giant bottle of Jose Cuervo Gold, didn't know how to really drink, and kind of just taught myself how to do it wrong. I had 5 shots within 20 minutes and puked twice. Oh, my stomach was on fire. And that was really the start of it, of me knowing that I didn't like to feel my emotions. And pretty much just went on a run from there. Started getting involved with a really bad crowd, a gang lifestyle, with some major gangs from South Central Los Angeles. That's funny, going from white suburbia down to there, completely different. But I was attracted to that. I wanted to fit in. And pretty much just started to lose everything. Thought I knew everything. I was 18 years old and getting this social security check for my father's death, and they really couldn't tell me anything. I was, because I thought I knew it all. And slowly but surely, I lost it all. I lost everything in material position. I lost my family. And I ended up living in a tent in Cascade, next to a lake, about a half a mile from a lake, and about half a mile away from Wayside County Jail. So I would literally wake up with flies landing on my face. The roof had ripped off of the tent, so when it rained on us. And when the bad boys down the street got in trouble, the sirens would blare all night, and there's no way to quiet that. I lost everything, man, and I really couldn't take that anymore. I did that for about 6 months, and it broke me down as a man. And I went to my mother, and I told her I needed help. I couldn't do the lifestyle that I was living anymore. So we went on to the computer and found this gentleman who had a sober living on the other side of town, and she said, okay, tomorrow we're going to go check that out. She went to the store after that. We looked on the computer, and I had completely lost the desire to live, and I went to the garage, and I found this rope, and I tied it up and put it around my neck, and I was on the second story, and I tied it over the banister, and I was going to jump. I wanted to kill myself. That's how much it really took a toll on me. That's how bad the disease got when I was young. I obviously didn't jump because I'm here to share a message today. So the next day, I talked to this gentleman that ran the sober living, the Reverend, and he said, come back tomorrow. Come tomorrow morning to go to the AA meeting, and we'll see if we can get you a bed. So that was the first meeting that I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, was that meeting. And I talked to that gentleman, and told him, I turned around and I told him, I don't know if I'm going to do this. I don't know if I'm ready. I'm 21 years old. I don't know if I'm going to do this. He said, okay, you're not ready. Get out of here. So I turned around and walked out that door. I walked about halfway down the Sierra Highway, the street that I was on, before I realized the only other place I was going to go to was under the bridge. So I turned around and told him I had nothing to lose, obviously. So I told him I might as well give it a shot. The next thing I know, I was on the back of a motorcycle with my roommate, driving up Sierra Highway without a helmet to the sober living. And that's where it started. When I got here, I was 115 pounds. I was wearing the same two pairs of clothes for 6 months. And I had this long hair, which I thought was fantastic and looked cool. But when you're bald in the front and then bald in the back, really. But I fooled myself into thinking that I was. That's where I started. I jumped in head first into this. I got a sponsor within 4 days and started working these steps. The first 90 days of me being sober was out of resentment towards my roommate, because he turned around to me and told me that I wouldn't stay sober. And I was like, I'm going to show you. So that was my first 90 days. I had this sponsor. He had what I wanted. That's why I picked him. He had a family. He had a career in the military. He was self-sufficient. And that's really what I wanted in life. So he was recommended to me. So I had him. And about 3.5 months over, this gentleman went to Missouri on an army leave and went out and got drunk. And he's still out there to this day. So I was fortunate enough to grab onto this group that I was in. It was a sponsor-sponsee meeting we went to every Sunday. I just held on to these gentlemen. Then eventually got my great-grand sponsored, and asked him to sponsor me, and he took me through the rest of my steps. Today, I have a life worth living through Alcoholics Anonymous. I've stayed out of trouble. I've obviously left the gang lifestyle behind. I'm pursuing a career in law enforcement. Go figure. I'm about halfway to get an associate's degree. I lived in that sober living for almost 2 years before I left and came up here to join all you wonderful people in Australia and Slater County. And it's a blessing that God has given me what I have today. So thank you. It was an honor speaking here tonight, and I appreciate it.
give a rousing welcome to Larry County. Welcome to our featured speaker, Anita.
I never got welcome like that ever anywhere when I was drinking and using. Can you hear me back there?
Yeah.
Awesome. I want to thank Albert. Albert had asked me if I would come out and speak, and he's not here with us tonight, so keep him in your prayers. He's been suffering something going on with his feet. I'll let him tell you about it. But keep him in your prayers. Also met Rick tonight. Thank you, Rick, for having me out. I want to say thanks. My mom's here tonight, so I'm really grateful for her to be here. You know, when I first started drinking, I was 8 years old, my first drink. My first drink that I really liked, anyway. It was wine. And it was actually my mom's uncles and my dad's half-brother. We used to stop, and me and my dad used to go fishing a lot up in Success Lake. And so during the cold times, he would stop at the bottom of the hill right off the reservation and pick up some wine. And when he'd do that, my uncles would come up from the orange groves, because they had stacks in the orange groves that would keep the oranges warm, and that's where my uncles would be. And I and so they'd come up, and I was scared of them because they were beat up and they were pretty ugly, and they didn't have teeth, and they were bad hygiene and the whole bit, and they spoke really rough, and they were just scary. So when we got up to the lake, they built a fire, and I'm freezing. I can't get out there on the lake with my dad, so he lets me stay with them, and they build a fire, and my uncle tells my dad to let me have a shot of wine, and I got that wine, and they weren't ugly anymore. You know, and that's what alcohol did for me in the beginning. And now, I don't believe I was an alcoholic, not at that age, because I was 10 years old the next time I took another drink. Because after it warmed up, we stopped picking up the winos, and they stopped coming up. Oh, I do got to share this, because we went up when the last time that my dad had bought some wine, we were driving up to the lake, and it wasn't cold. It was probably middle of February, and it was starting to warm up, and I'm shivering, acting like it's cold. You know, so I might have been out, you know, on my way to being an alcoholic. I did bust the seal, and I did drink some wine. I don't remember what happened after that. But it was the last time I drank wine. Well, no, it wasn't the last time. I'll tell you a little bit more about my wino days. So I ended up, I lived off of two different reservations, with my mom's family and with my dad's family. And living with my mom's family was a little rough. I had a grandmother who was very mean to me. And I never knew why. I never knew why. And it really hurt me, because I could never see anything good about me. I was a kid who grew up, we'd go to the swimming pool a lot, and we'd get dropped off there, and my folks would go to the bar and they'd stay there all day and all night, and we'd have to find a way home. And that was pretty hard growing up as a kid, because all the other kids' family was either there with them at the show or at the swimming pool, and ours weren't. And that was, you know, I grew up angry. I knew that was part of my anger when I got clean and sober and started working this program. But even as I kept, I was going back and forth to both reservations. My dad would take me out to my grandmother's, and I loved being with my other grandmother, my dad's mom, because she always made my bed. She always had food on the table, and I was always with her. I got to go up to the mountains and go hiking and camping with her, and she'd take me all over, and we'd pick her roots for her basket weaving, and so I got to be a part of that, and I got to learn a lot from her. My uncle, who also lived with her, I loved him dearly. His name was Clute. And they were, so when I was with that family in Lemoore, I had a lot. I loved being there. But I missed my siblings and my mother, and I didn't know where my dad was. I just got dropped off. But I loved it there. We had horses there, and I got to spend a lot of time there, back and forth in different schools. And when I'd go to, back to Porterville, I remember we were told we couldn't salute the flag. Yes, we got prejudices too. I had a lot of prejudices growing up, and I realized once I got sober that they were installed. They didn't really belong to me. They shouldn't have. So one day when I get back to Lemoore and I'm living with my grandma, I get sent home from school, and I'm in the first grade. And my grandma doesn't ask me why I got sent home. She never says anything. She's just on the bed and looking at pictures and through her album, and it was of all the soldiers in our family, on my dad's side of the family. And I tell her, why did they go to war? Because these people took our land, you know, and that was my prejudice. I was installed with these things. I was never nurtured. And so my grandma tells me that they went to war because they were good fighters and they were good soldiers, and that this was still our land, and that they protected us. And I kind of left it at that, but it kind of melted some of my pain of growing up, thinking maybe I can be patriotic. I don't know. So this went on. My life went on this way, back and forth as a child, back and forth. So I was growing up kind of confused, because now I'm to the point where I don't know if I'm my mom's child. I know I'm always with my dad's family. My dad's grandma loves me, and I'm not sure if my mom's mom loves me. And that was the pain that I was in, you know, and it was very confusing for me as a child. So it does get happy, you guys. It really does. So what ends up happening was when I go back to my grandma's, I start drinking with all the other kids on the reservation. And my grandma Lamore wasn't mean. She wasn't abusive. And she had a way about her that if she was angry at me, she just didn't talk to me, and I can deal with that. So when I was running around with the kids on the reservation, we were getting into all other kinds of things, because we didn't have alcohol or wine or anything like that, so we did other things. And it started, I remember my grandma and my uncle taking me back to my mom and dad when they had moved up in Northern California. And I remember being very angry because I'm abandoned by the person who I thought loved me, the only person. And I was 10 years old. I was in the fourth grade. And it turned out to be the best time of my life. It was the best year of my life because my dad was working. My mom was home. We were clean. We had clothes. We had food. And there wasn't a lot of drinking. There wasn't a bunch of other family involved in arguments. And it was like free living. It was really great. And then we moved back home, and I got angry again, because when we moved back home, there was no more job, there was no more clothes, there was no more food, and we moved into my grandmother's garage, and there was no hot water, and it was very, and don't get me wrong, my mom did the best she could to keep us clean, she did the best she could to keep us fed, but that was my life growing up, you know, and sometimes, you know, I can be driving down the road and something will hit me, and it can hurt a little, but it doesn't hurt me the way it used to, because I know that's not my life anymore, and I know that I've changed immensely because of this program and what God has done for me. So through my drinking, now we're all living back on the same reservation. There's the whole family, my siblings, and we're all growing up, and we're all working, and we're all drinking. And the tribe ends up building this bingo parlor, and every one of us worked there, and every one of us drank there. And that's where everything really opened up. Don't get me wrong, I drank through high school too, and I went to a lot of parties drunk. Never made it to the football game, never made it to the ending, and I never made it to the dance. You know? So, but through all that, this. You know, I want to back up a little bit because I want to talk a little bit about I had uncles that were cowboys, and that's one of the things that really made it fun when I was growing up. And they were big and they were very handsome, and I always got to ride with them, and they always did their tack and made our bridles and whatnot. So I was always good to be around them. And I can ride a horse. I can break horses. And they used to put me on horses. And I remember one time my mom telling me that I was just as crazy as the horses that I rode, you know. So when my drinking started getting worse and worse, and I was always riding constantly, my drinking started getting worse. People would actually give me horses that they couldn't break. And they were also paying me to take care of their horses. So I was making money on the side. I was riding horses. I was doing everything I loved. I could ride out to this little town called Stratford that sell me whiskey, and I'd put it in my saddlebag, and I'd ride home drunk. So would the horse, you know. And when I turned 18 and I was working for the bingo parlor, I kept getting fired. They kept firing me because I just couldn't stay sober. You know, I'd show up to work and I'd do good for about a week, get that first paycheck, you know, and after that is I'm on. I made it to the top, so I can go out and drink and it just continued this way, and I became a nuisance. And one of the things that I did was this grandmother who took care of me, I was constantly bringing the party home to her house, constantly. And I would borrow her car, and I would bring it back dirty, and I would mess everything up and bring the party over and just have ugly parties, and my poor grandma could never sleep. And I'd eat her food, and I'd use her electricity, and I'd use her soap. I was just, that's what I did to her. And every time she tried to make me leave, I wouldn't. Anytime that she tried to make me leave and take my party with me, I wouldn't. And then I'd beg her and beg her for her car over and over and over until she'd finally get tired of me and let me have it so I can just get out of there. And this went on for a few years, and I'd take her last $10, you know. It didn't matter. I'd take whatever she had, and I would tell her, Grandma, mow your lawn today, and I knew she really didn't want me to because I'd never finish, but I'd always expect the $10 up front, you know, and I'd tell her I'll come back tomorrow, and that never happened. I'd never come back tomorrow. When I did, it was usually because I needed something else from her. And life was just getting really ugly. It was getting really painful. I remember one time I was out partying, and my dad and his friend found me out in the field beat up. And I was starting to hang out with some really ugly people. I mean, really, really ugly people. And I didn't know why. Well, nobody else wanted to hang out with me. That's why. Just thought of that. My best friends, the people who I started drinking with, wanted nothing to do with me. They really didn't, and I don't blame them, because I started to have blackouts, but I didn't know that's what they were. And I started doing some really crazy things in these blackouts, like not showing up. I'm coming to, and I'm coming to in fields and cleaning myself off the best I could with my spit. And there was a lady that used to live about four houses down, and back then you could walk through to get to your house. There was all these little trails, you know. And she'd always give me something to drink because I needed it that bad. And she used to tell me how her dad used to need it that bad. My next door neighbors, they were an older couple, and they'd always try to talk to me. Her husband drank wine, and he'd give me a shot of wine because he knew I needed it. It was that bad. I would shake. By the time I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 22 years old. I had no shoes. You know, Zach talked about the little bit that he was wearing, and I was the same way. And I was not going to go into this treatment center. My mom says, "Yeah, you are." I had two kids during this time. Some of the things that I was doing to them during my drinking, I'm sorry, my mouth was starting to get really dry. When my body would actually Thank you, Regina. When my body was craving my alcohol, I could not stay home. Nobody wanted to babysit the kids because, I would go off for 3 or 4 days and you wouldn't see me again. And what ended up happening when they thought that they can, I guess, teach me a lesson by not babysitting, what ended up happening was as I would leave, I'd wait for the kids to go to sleep. And I'm talking 2 and 1 years old. They'd go to sleep, and I'd think if I just go down the street and drink with my buddy, I'll come back. And that never happened. I never came back. And then what was horrible and terrifying is I never knew where to start to look for them. And the worst part for me is if they were with my family, if they were with my mom and dad, because then I'd get scolded really bad. And then I'd get to this thinking that why don't they just keep them? They have a better home than I do. They got more money than I do, and they can raise them better because I don't know how to be a mom, and I don't want to be one. And that's where my head was going with all this. And I really thought that maybe I didn't love my kids through all the beating and all the fighting that I was doing and putting them in there. Excuse me. So what ended up happening was through all these blackouts and all these things going on, and I'm not talking once, I'm talking every time I drank. Yeah, I just could not. I'd look for it. I'd try. I would really try. But I drank everything in anyone's drink. I don't care what was in it. I would lean over and there could be ashes in it and there could be cigarette butts in it. It didn't matter. I drank it, got rid of the even though it burned and it was disgusting, and I would get grossed out by it, throw up, but I'd still drink. You know, and I know today that that's me. I'm that alcoholic. I'm the one with the body craved it, and it talks about that in the big book. I ended up getting into this treatment center. And I got to say this really quick. I thought my sobriety date was March 9th. It's not. It's March 8th, and I just found that out today. How about that? I sobered up. Yeah, I went back to March 9th, 1989, and it says Wednesday. And that's the day that I went up there, and I know this. And the reason why I know this is because it was the night of our sweats. Our tribal program, it would have sweats on a Wednesday night. And the other reason why I know this is because the next night I went to my very first meeting up in Springville, which was on a Thursday night. So my sobriety date just changed. But I don't know yet because I'm very fond of that night. So I went into this treatment center and I started listening to these people. I didn't like them. I didn't like anybody because I didn't like myself. And I was so beat up. I didn't want people to look at me because I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't good enough. I mean, I'm wearing somebody else's shoes, you know, when I got there, because I was not going to go in this treatment center because I didn't have a pair of shoes. And one of my drinking buddies, who was my sister, said, "Well, you can have my shoes." And I was really upset about that. And so they drive me up to this treatment center, and like I said, there was a sweat going on, and I wanted nothing to do with that. I absolutely wanted nothing to do with that. There was a meeting going on the next day, and I wanted nothing to do with that. So what ended up happening was, again, I know everybody hears this story. Everybody was giggly, and they were laughing, and everybody's faces were red, and everybody was happy in AA. And I was thinking, these guys are all drinking, man. They are. They got to be drinking a couple of shots, and they're going to teach me how to do that controlled stuff that I've been looking for this whole time. And then they started talking about never drinking, and that got real scary for me. And I started listening to the stories, and you guys started talking about your blackouts and things that you've done, and you called them a blackout. See, when I was out there drinking and using, when I was having blackouts, I'm my own doctor. I diagnosed myself. I thought I had a brain tumor, and I'm going to die soon, so therefore I'm going to keep drinking. But it was a blackout. It was a blackout. And so, you know, I growing up, we had a lot of hard things going on in our family, and I want to share this. I had two uncles, so actually three uncles that I adored. Those were my dad's brothers, and one of them killed the other brother. And it was a very, very painful time. Very, very painful time. But I knew my dad was going to get me through this and teach me some life skill in this and teach me and pull the whole family through it. He was going to do it. I knew he could because I believed in him and I loved him and he was my hero. And I remember when I walked through the back door and I still remember grabbing that doorknob. And when I walked in, my dad was on the bed and I remember him rolling over. He had just woken up from being drunk and he asked my mom if it was true. And my mom says, yes, Tone, it is true. And I remember him grabbing that bottle and drinking him right back to sleep again. And that's how I learned to deal with my pain. It's how I learned, you know, and I think about all this stuff. I get into Alcoholics Anonymous and my whole life has changed. We don't live that way no more. There's still things going on in our life and there's still tragedies that go on, but we don't live that way no more. We sit and we talk about it and we deal with it. So growing up with some of these tragedies, I never knew why, and I always wanted to know why. I lost two of my uncles, and one went to prison and the other one was dead. And there was just so much pain going on. Well, again, when I got sober, there was still things going on. I lost an aunt, and she had just had a baby, and the baby wasn't I think maybe 2 or 3 weeks old, and she had gotten drunk and hit a tree, and she died, and all her kids were really little, and that was another painful time, you know, just. But I was sober. I was sober at that time when that happened. I had just gotten sober, and you know, when I got sober, I started. When I did step one, I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew that once I listened to you people, I identified. I really started identifying with all you people, and you know, one day I was when I moved back home, I had to get a new sponsor because, and I was told that by my sponsor who was sponsoring me because I was about to ready to deal with the meat of what was going on in my life. And I needed somebody right there who can help me. Somebody who was, and this person was cuckoo. She was just as crazy as me. I'd have to call my sponsor to deal with my sponsor. And she knows that. She knows this is how I talk. We have a really good relationship. So I'm not holding back. No. But what happened was she started getting me in with my family. She really did. She started telling me that these are things that I needed to do. And one of them was after I told her all this stuff about how I treated my grandma, everything that I did to my grandmother, she said, Anita, from now on, whatever your grandma wants, you're going to do for her. So I would mow her lawn. I would mow it, and I would do a great job. And she'd tell me, Anita, you do not accept any money from your grandma for doing that work. You do not accept nothing. You don't take nothing from your grandmother no more. You can't go wash your clothes over there. You can't borrow her money. You can't do nothing. What you're going to do is you're going to be a service to your grandmother. If your grandma wants to go to town, you're going to take her to town. And nobody wanted to take grandma to town. I'd have my day planned out. My grandma would call me and she'd say, hey, can you take me to town? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I tell her, okay, I'll pick you up. What time do you want me to pick you up? She says, well, I got to get ready. And so I knew it was about 4 hours from now. But I did it. And you know what was really cool about that? I started to realize why I was doing this, and it started becoming a real joy for me. I started to treat this golden, you know, and for me it was golden. I can go do things with my grandma for my grandmother, but I was still dealing with a lot of my anger towards other family members taking advantage of grandma still. And I couldn't protect her from that. My sponsor said, Anita, you got to let them do what they got to do. You can't do it no more. You're the one working a program, not them. If they borrow soap, if they come over and use her laundry or her electricity, you don't say nothing. You just let them. You don't want to cause any argument or fight. And I bit my teeth and I really started, I started to do it, but I'd still get really angry. And she said, Anita, the reason what makes you so angry is because you're not the one getting away with it no more. You know, and I was like, wow, that kind of made some sense, you know, because I wasn't. And I'm doing all the hard work. You know, I'll back up a little bit. One thing that I did to my grandmother, it was actually the last time I borrowed her car, I sold it in the bar, you know. And it's kind of funny because sometimes I say, how do you make amends to that? Well, you know what happened? My cousin borrowed her car and it broke down. And I called my sponsor and I was mad. I was just frustrated with her. And my sponsor says, well, help her buy a new one. You owe her one. I got that opportunity to help Grandma buy a car, you know, and I wasn't the one dirtying it up anymore. So I celebrated my five years at this point, and I went over to my grandma's, and I was sitting on her bed. My grandma was a tidy little girl, I mean lady, and she always had on her lipstick, and she's just so cute, you know. And she'd be on her bed, and my grandma always did her rosary, and she'd do things like that, and I never done anything like that, nor did I want to. So I'm at her house and I'm on her bed, and her bed's real firm and it's all nice and neat. She's got all her crocheting everywhere and all her stuff that she's had over the years, and very clean. So I'm playing with my medallion, my 5-year medallion, and I'm bouncing it on her bed. And she said, what is that? And I said, it's my medallion, Grandma. She says, what's it for? I said, I just celebrated my birthday tonight. I said, it's 5 years of not drinking. And she said, really? And I said, really, Grandma? I haven't had a drink in 5 years. And she cupped it, and she says, I think I'll keep this. You know, and right then and there, I knew that amends was made. And it was the most beautiful moment I've ever had in, well, it's not the most beautiful. There's a lot of beautiful things that I've gotten to enjoy in Alcoholics Anonymous. But that was one of the first ones that I really knew I was doing something. I was on my way. And I was very proud of that. My grandmother passed away not too long after that. She got sick, and that wasn't very painful for me either. Her death was not painful for me. I knew that my beliefs today, I know that there's people waiting for her. And her husband had passed away. I think he was like 39 or 40, somewhere around there, and she had waited. She had been asked her hand in marriage several times, and she never remarried. So I knew that she had a nice reunion. So I was very happy for her. So I continue working these steps. You know, I continue doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm going to meetings and I'm working. And, you know, one of the things that I did too when I, during that time, is I got involved with my tribe. And what I started doing was I noticed that the kids, well, I was also going to school at the time as well. I went back and I got certified under drug and alcohol. Then I went back and got certified under elders abuse and working with children on the reservation for prevention. And I did those things because as I was, when I got sober and started hanging out with AAers, I realized that our kids never had anything. They really didn't. Our kids and growing up, they never, and the kids that were coming up didn't have anything. So what I started doing was I started doing dances and taking these kids to powwows, and I started raising money. You know, my boss, the one that kept firing me, the only reason why he kept firing me was because I was drinking. He really liked me because he told me that. He said, you ever sober up, you come back and I'll give you a job. Well, I got sober and wasn't asking for a job, but I wanted the money, you know. And he helped me out. He did. He started helping us out, and then we started doing a lot of fundraisers. So now I'm doing all these things with the kids on the reservation, but it wasn't by myself. I had a lot of people in AA. A lot of the AAers were coming out and helping. We're taking pictures of the kids. We got DJs going on. We're doing all these fun things. We got balloons and cupcakes and all. I mean, everybody's helping out in AA. They're really helping out, and it was really cool. It was a good time for me. And that went on for a long time, and my little brother was helping. He was doing all this stuff with me. His name is Marcy. He was helping me out. He's doing a lot of the DJing. And then what ends up happening is he starts hanging out with me, with you guys, because we're riding around in bands and we're singing music and we think we're rock stars. And, you know, he's like 16 years old at the time. Well, he was 12 when I got sober. But at this time now, after doing all these kid things, he started to grow up, and he's in high school, and he's helping out, and he's doing all these things with me. And I'm taking him to conventions. He's just hanging out with me. And he told me at 16, he says, sister, I'm glad you got sober. He said, because I hated you when I was 12. And I told him I hated me too. Because he's seen how I was living. One of the cool things about having him around was is I got to share my story with him many times. In fact, he'd make fun of me sometimes. He really would. Anyway, I'm not going to bring that up. But So it was really fun because now I have my little brother with me, and he's playing in every softball tournament that I got, that I play co-ed in, and he's just traveling with me. We're having a great time. He ends up meeting this girl. She's 16 years old. She's from another reservation, and I remember my mom being upset because she asked if I would talk to him because he's sleeping with this girl. And so I do talk to him. I bought him a box of condoms, and I told him about safe sex. And I remember my mom getting mad at me for that. You know. And again, I'm getting a chance to be a part of my family. My sisters are still out there doing their thing, and it was really sad because they're still at the same bars. They're still at the same people. And I remember one time I walked into the bar, and I hadn't been back in a bar in a long time, and especially the one that I had partied in. I actually broke their big fancy jukebox. I didn't take the blame for that, of course, but I walked in, and my sister was sitting at the edge of the bar, and I walked up to her, and I said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And she says, "Hey, I'm just doing my thing, right?" And I'm like, "All right, cool." I said, and I felt really hurt for her, and I said, "Do you miss?" I said, I asked her, I said, "Do you miss us?" I said, "Do you miss this, really?" And she said, "Yeah." She goes, "I do miss you." She said, "I miss all the partying that we used to do." And I said, "And you just sit here?" She says, "Yeah, but you know what?" She says, "Sometimes I just pretend you're back there playing." And that broke my heart. I had to leave. It broke my heart that she's still sitting in the bar pretending that I'm there playing pool in the back. I was like, God, I never went back to that bar. And back with my little brother, so he's hanging out with me, doing all these things with me, and we're having a good time. He ends up getting diagnosed with cancer, and I have a really good friend of mine that I worked with who really helped me out to get certified in all these other areas, and he had 23 years in the program, and his wife had 18 years in the program, and I spent a lot of time with these people up in Fresno and Clovis, and his aunt had just passed away from cancer, and I remember I called him, and I said, "Steve," I said, "my little brother's got cancer. That's what's going on with him." And he says, "Where are you at right now?" I said, "I'm sitting on my kitchen counter." And he says, "I'm going to tell you something. You're going to be angry at me, and you don't want to hear this, but you're going to have to help and prepare your little brother and let him know about God, because he's going to die." I told him what kind of cancer it was, and I was angry. I was angry at him. I got very angry at my friend, and I wanted to hang up, but there was some truth to that. I knew he wasn't lying to me. I knew he would never hurt me. He'd always loved us. I knew he loved my little brother. He was always inviting us over for dinner and always playing softball and just anything that we needed, he was always there. So I'm coming up on my ninth year sobriety at this time, and I'm going to a lot of meetings, and I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm not stopping to go to meetings. I knew this was the first time in my sobriety that I knew I would have to go through this pain, because I knew I was not going to drink. I just knew it, and no matter how much pain it was. So what ended up happening is I talked to my brother a lot. I talked to him a lot about God and the fellowship and our belief system, because I'm now sweating and I'm doing all, I'm drumming and I'm singing with him in our language, and I'm just having a good time with him. And so I spent that 3 months, because he didn't live 6 months. They gave him 6 months to live. He didn't live six. He lived three. And I spent all that time with him, and I remember when he was, the last time he went, it was the second to the last time he went to the hospital, and he had told me that he loved me. He made me sit in front of him, and he told me how much he loved me. And he told me that, he says, "You know, sister, I know I'm not going to get to live a long life," he said, "but the short life that I've gotten to live, I got to tell you something." He said, "The best time of my short life is when you let me go and do those DJs, be the DJ and go to all those dances for AA and hang out with all your AA friends and take me to those conferences." Alcoholics Anonymous works in our family. This puts us right back with our families. I have a beautiful relationship with my mother. Back to my grandmother, her mother. I was out at a powwow, and I knew I couldn't talk to my mom about my grandma. I was told I cannot cause pain to, it was, hard on myself and easy on others. And so I couldn't talk to my mom about the pain that I was going through with my grandmother, her mother. But we were out at the powwow, and I remember my sponsor telling me, only if she asks. Well, my mother asked. And I got to remind her, or I didn't remind her. I said, we talked about what was going on as a kid for me and my grandmother, and I said, did you know that she was that mean to me? And she said, yeah. And my mouth dropped, and I went through a lot of pain, and I said, then why? Why? She said, because I was afraid of her too. And you know what? Pain melted. It didn't matter. I found my mother. I had a relationship, and we built a really good relationship. Today I go to my mom's. We drink coffee. We talk about our belief system. We share about family. It's this program just giving me back all these things that I never knew I was going to have. I formed a relationship with my father. What's my time frame here? My father, my dad, I had a really good relationship growing up with him. I mean, he took me everywhere with him. I got to be his tail. You know, I enjoyed being around him. Real smooth, real cool guy. He never panicked about nothing. And if you were in a crisis, he can get you out of it. I'm not kidding you. He can get you out of a crisis. It was just something about him. In fact, some of the men in Alcoholics Anonymous who got to spend time and get to know my dad and fishing trips and hunting trips, they tell me that they wanted to impress my dad because they said that he was a man amongst men. And I always thought that was so cool that people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not talking about a newcomer, I'm talking about people with 26, 30 years. And I thought that was so cool because I've always admired that about my dad. I'm not saying that my dad was a saint. I've seen a lot of issues come out of him. You know, I was on the phone one day with my Uncle Clute when he was in prison because I used to talk to him. I was kind of like, I gave him the rundown how the family was doing. This is my uncle who killed my dad's other brother. And I'd give him the rundown. He'd always ask me, are you helping Grandma? Are you helping Grandma? I'm sober now. I'm sober, and I had just gotten sober, and I'd had about maybe 4 years, 3 or 4 years at the time, maybe a little bit longer. I'll have to go back and check that now. But what ended up happening was I'm telling my uncle everything about what happened, and he'd always ask me, hey, because my dad and my Uncle Clute went hunting a lot. They did a lot of things together. My dad was real good to all of his brothers. And that question, why, how come this happened and my dad didn't help me through it? I'm on the phone with my uncle and my dad happens to walk through the door. And as he's asking me all these questions about my dad, all I can say is, My uncle says, your dad's standing right there, isn't he? And I said, yeah, he is. And he paused for a minute and he says, ask him if he can talk to me. And I told my dad, I said, Dad, it's Uncle Clute. He wants to know if he can talk to him, if you'll talk to him. And my dad takes his hat off like he does, scratches his head, kind of nods, and he grabs the phone, and I walk out, and I walk out into the front of my grandma's porch. And I'm standing there, and I don't know what's being said or what's going on. And my dad comes walking out in about 40 minutes. And my dad says, let's go for a ride. So we went for a ride, and my dad explained some things to me. I've shared with my family since then, but I got some answers quick. Those answers that my dad couldn't give me when I was 13 years old, he was able to give me them in my sobriety, and that was God, again, doing for me. You know, God's never taken from me. He's only given back to me. How could I not love this program? You know, I don't understand why. I shouldn't say I don't understand. Of course I do. If you're an alcoholic like me, you can't stop. And this program is not easy. I know that. But once you get to a certain point, it just, for me, everything just opens up. I enjoy my fellowship. I enjoy some of my favorite people are in this room tonight. I got a group of people I ride bikes with on a weekly basis. And the cool thing about it is when I go out and ride with them, they're gentlemen. When we go out to eat dinner, they treat the waitresses really good. And we go to a meeting before we go on a bike ride, most of the time, or we go find a meeting. And I just love the way that they treat people, I have friends in Alcoholics Anonymous that don't ride with us. I hang out with you because I love the way you treat people. I love the way you treat yourself, the way you talk to me, the way I get to talk to you. That's what I love about this program. Is the respect. Now there's some of you I don't like. I won't hang out with you. I don't like the way you talk, the way you cuss, the way you treat people. I don't tolerate that. I don't want you around my family. I don't want you around my kids. My grandchildren, my kids are grown up. But I wouldn't, I like the cleanup that we do around here. I really do. I like the fact that I get to get up in the morning and I say my prayers and I thank my Creator, and I choose to call my Creator Grandfather. I get to say my prayers to Him and I think about my day. I got a sponsor that I get to call when I'm confused or something's going on, and like within 2 minutes I answer my own question and I'm happy again. I'm smiling and I'm joking around again, and it's really fun. That's how this program works. All I know is that ever since I turned my life and my will over to the care of God on step 3, my life has gotten better, and it says that my life would, remarkable things will begin to happen, as long as I stick close to Him and perform His work well, and I do my best to perform, and I do my best to do His work. I tease a lot because if I had it my way, you people wouldn't be able to bring your cell phones in meetings or your children. Take them to all our events. Take them to all our events. Don't bring your dogs in here. Leave them at home. I tell people that I really do. I do this. I go to town, and I don't know if you guys get mad, but I don't like getting mad. So when I get into a parking lot, especially at Walmart, it really creeps me out because you have all the nobody cares where they leave the cart, and it's really frustrating when you got a really good spot, but there's a cart in the way, So I do my best not to leave my cart there. I really do. And sometimes when I'm not even feeling good and I'm angry and I'm like, I don't even know why I'm angry, I have this cart and I'm pushing it and I'm thinking, I'm just going to leave it here like everybody else. But I got to remember, that's not my character today. I'm building character through Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to be the best person that I can be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I get to hang out with my family, and I do got friends outside of AA. I got a job that I get to go to work, and I got a group of people that absolutely love and depend on some of my decision making. And I love the way that they treat me, and I love because I treat them back. It's like going into when I go out for dinner or something, I love catering with my family. I love to be around them. I love to spend that time with them today. I never had it so good, you guys. And all I had to do was work these steps, I wanted to talk about step 6 because that really is one of my favorite steps, because I really like looking at all my warped instincts. It's what I try to correct today, and I try to have, I just want to be good. From the bottom of my heart, that's what I want, because I know that's what God wants me to be. I know that today, and I try to give my life to Him on a daily basis. I don't try, I do. Even if I have to do it in the afternoon, I do. So I'm gonna keep coming back, and I hope you too do too, and I hope somebody got something out of this. If not, I know I did. I'll stay sober tonight. Thank you. Yeah.